The Living Dreads podcast is back. It's 2019 now. Been on a little, been AWOL, pretty much. I'm Otis B. Dreads, and normally, as you all know or are familiar with this disaster piece, usually it's Malice Murphy joining me or our good friend Bobby. Neither one of them are there. I have actually Mrs. Dreads. Yes, Jody is, she's going to sit in and she's going to pretty much just give me somebody to look at and talk to.
Pretty much.
But, yes, Night of Living Dreads podcast, nightoflivingdreads.com, no A in Dreads. You can also catch us over there at Facebook, Night of Living Dreads on Facebook. And, of course, our good friends at Gorehounds of Horror over there on Facebook. Webpage is not up and running, although otherwise I'd throw that website out. That is being parked for construction, doing construction on the site, putting up walls and installing plumbing. That was supposed to be a joke, Jody. but yeah, you can check Gorehounds of Horror on Facebook. Really cool group, man. I call it the best damn horror group on Facebook, and it pretty much is. All right. I got before, because, you know, we're going to talk about, you know, just when you think you have found the cream of the crop when it comes to whack-a-doodles, along comes a man named Albert Fish, who is, who we're going to talk a little bit about. Very disturbing, guy. There's a lot of jokes to come too, but before we get into Albish, there's a Ghostbusters 3, Jody. You're a fan of the Ghostbusters movies, aren't you?
Yeah.
Well, the guy who directed, Ivan Reitman, his son is directing Ghostbusters, and it said I've heard, you know, mixed stories. I've heard that some of the original cast members from the first two are going to be in there, but not according to this article, dreadcentral.com. For one, Bill Murray has openly resistant on doing and being a part of another addition into the Ghostbusters franchise, stating, quote, "People don't want to see old guys chasing ghosts," he said. And there's even claims that he shredded the original screenplay for Ghostbusters 3, which was penned by Dan Aykroyd. So not very happy And it says it has no affiliation with the 2016 version, which had Melissa McCarthy, and I had no intentions on seeing that.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I haven't even wanted to. It just doesn't look good. Ghostbusters, they're not supposed to be women.
And why is that?
Women can't fight ghosts.
Whatever.
They're not. Now all of a sudden, women turns into like Laura Croft or something from Tomb Raider. I don't know. I'm just partial to the original. It's supposed to be these guys, and that's what I expect. But I guess what they're gonna do is they're casting some teenagers to play the roles that Bill Murray, Beckman, and all that. Yeah. In this Heidi. Sal Verity, that Ren, whose father directed the first two Ghostbusters movie, will direct this pitch. Reitman has also co-written and play with Gil Keenan, and plans to shoot the film this summer. Sony planning to release the latest sequel in the summer of 2020. Insiders say this film will not be a continuation of the 1984 sequel and will not be connected to the 2016 film. Thank God. Sources couldn't say if that means that the original cast members will be back, as exact story details are still being kept under wraps. But sources say Reitman has begun testing teenagers for four mystery roles. I don't know what that means. I don't know if they're going to play the roles of the Ghostbusters themselves, or are these going to be the kids? Possibly, of the Ghostbusters, Bill Murray, maybe their kids, carrying on the Ghostbuster legacy. Who knows? But they're scheduled to start shooting this summer and summer 2020 to be released by Sony Pictures. So, I don't know. I think I might give it a shot. I'd be more inclined to give this one a shot than I did the all-female. I'm not trying to be sexist. I don't know. I'd never really wanted to. It just did not really appeal to me.
Well, I don't even think I'd want to see this one if Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd and them weren't in it.
But what if they carried off? What if they kind of played off of their characters? Maybe they'll make a small appearance like Vacation movie, the National Lampoon's Vacation, right, where Rusty is older now with kids, taking his kids to Wally World, that whole deal. And Chevy Chase... Beverly D'Angelo, is that her name? Something like that? Where they make a small appearance in it, to kind of play off those characters. I don't know. I don't care. Another quick movie news. As most people probably know, you are a member over there of the newsroom for the past few days. Over there, that movie I'm very excited for.
Yeah.
Didn't you say that? The Devil's Rejects is probably his highest grossing film. Along there with his version of Halloween. But I'm thinking that one's probably... What do you think?
Oh, maybe. There's a lot of anticipation in 31.
Yeah.
A lot more than what there was for Devil's Rejects.
Well, sure. And I honestly don't even remember when, they were even doing any, real promotion on that. That was back in 2000... Nine, maybe 2000, maybe a little bit later than that. So that's scheduled. I haven't heard a release date yet, but sometime soon this year we'll get Three from Hell. And Three from Hell. So this is could possibly be a pretty good year for horror movies. Hopefully. Wasn't that great of a year last year? I mean, a couple highly anticipated movies came out last year. The Nun being one, of course. Halloween, which we went and saw. And
we went and seen The Nun, too.
We went and seen The Nun, yeah. And, they weren't bad. They weren't bad. I was... The Nun, as I think I talked about on another podcast, that... It was just chock full of jump scares. That's all he did, you know, just jump here. It didn't really creep me out or wig me out. All that, none. She's a.
And they could have showed her more.
They should have, I think. It was because it's all intertwined with the Conjuring series, and they all kind of, you know, come full circle. And this is I think the nun was supposed to be before all of that,
right?
You know, kind of a prequel to the Conjurings is how I took it. The new Halloween. Again, I think they should have showed Michael more.
I do too.
There's a lot of side stories with, you know, Laura Strode, of course, you know, played by Jamie Lee Curtis. I think they could have you know, done a little bit more. I dug it because I'm just, you know, anybody that knows me knows I'm a huge Michael Myers. He's one of my favorite horror villains. Your favorite horror villain is Albert Fish, ain't it?
Yeah. He's an interesting character.
He absolutely is. We might as well just, you know, dive right into it. Because, and I just want to warn you guys, there's some things that we're going to talk about that is probably, this is probably one of the more disturbing serial killers that we've discussed on this podcast. And we've talked about some pretty sick individuals, some pretty barbaric individuals, and I don't know if they can hold a candle to Mr. Albert Fish, or as he was born, Hamilton Howard Fish. Now, he was known by a few nicknames. You know, these killers, they have, you know, real catchy nicknames. You know, you got the Night Stalker, yeah, Son of Sam, and he had about four or five nicknames. One was the Brooklyn Vampire, the Moon Maniac. That's weird. The Werewolf of Wisteria, the Gray Man, and then the infamous Boogeyman. And looking through some of the cases where there was an abduction of kids, and we're going back to, you know, the 1920s, early 1900s, and it's right around there that I think is the first time I've heard kids refer to, you know, an actual person as the Boogeyman, which I thought had just a really creepy overtone to it. You know, the Boogeyman, you just don't hear that a whole lot. You know, of course, you hear, you know, you can't kill the Boogeyman, the old Michael Myers thing, but I just thought that it had a really creepy feeling to it. His mom, Ellen, and his father, Lionel, there was, you know, records that show that there was a lot of mental illness that, you know, surged through the Fish family veins. To what extent, we do know that his mother would have what they call auditory. She was hearing shit, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, she was having hallucinations. She was hearing shit, which Albert, later on in his years, developed the same thing. And you talk about a gap in age. His father was 43 years older than his mother, which I guess, hey, age is just a number.
When is dad, like, 70-something years old when?
75, I think, when he was born.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, there you are. I mean, you're a senior citizen at this point, and I don't think he died of a heart attack, which, whether it was the family mental illness that really, you know, sparked all of his problems and his, you know, weird sexual deviance, you know, actions, or what. But what we do know for sure is that I got something in my eye. What we do know for sure is that when his father passed of a heart attack, his mother, just not financially capable of taking care of him and his brothers and sisters, which I think there was four or five of them.
Three
plus Fish. Okay. And so the mother did the only thing she knew to do. Apparently there was no other immediate family around to help her take care of Albert and his brothers and sisters. She, you know, put him in a, what was it?
St. John's,
yeah, an orphanage. Threw him in an orphanage, and he was there till he was 9 years old. So we're talking, oh, I'm gonna guess about 6-7 years. I'm not, you know, exactly sure.
Well, you said he was what, 5 when his dad died?
Okay, so yeah, he was there for at least 4 or 5 years, give or take. And that was where we start seeing the Albert Fish we all know and love start to come to fruition. There were stories there where him and some of the other boys there at the orphanage would go over in this pasture where there would be some horses. They would tie the horse up to a fence, a post, or whatever. They would dip the horse's tail in kerosene or some kind of flammable liquid, and then light the son of a bitch. Then cut the rope and watch the horse take off. It's pretty cruel,
mm-hmm.
You know. And this was an orphanage. You would think an orphanage, okay, these kids have already been through a lot. You know, they're not with their mom and dads. You know, they're separated from their family. You would think it would be kind of a compassionate place.
No.
Not so much. At least not this orphanage, anyway.
Well, you figure back in that time, though, a good ass whipping was...
Well, true. It was tough love, and that's exactly what they got in this orphanage, was tough love.
That was your punishment.
Exactly. There was a lot of spankings, paddling. There was, you know, just... They were treated very sadistically, and which kind of, you know, developed Albert into this person who loved inflicting pain on others, who loved even more, I think, to have pain inflicted on him.
Yeah, because he did it to himself.
He did it to himself. He was very much a self-mutilator. Is what we would, you know, I guess call it now.
Well, he's a sadist.
He's a sadist, yeah. So, you know, he really got off on this stuff. And almost in a literal sense, they said that, you know, he would actually get an erection from paddled in school. The pain brought him some sort of sexual gratification to the point where he got aroused from the pain.
Now,
which is not normal.
Well, that's true. Because it got to a point that he was doing it himself.
Yeah.
Inflicting the pain himself.
For that sexual arousal, and then later on having his kids take and paddle him. He would have a paddle with nails stuck in it, and he would, they said he would maybe cover it up or make it seem like a game to the kids. Yeah, come on, let's bang daddy in the tuchus. And nails, I mean, just driving nails into his ass.
Yeah. And no, it was his, what,
and
his
and
hips,
it was in his
leg.
Pelvic area, yes, all around that region right there. I think it was when he was arrested.
They found like 21.
29 needles that were embedded in this guy's pelvic area. And a lot of them were self-inflicted. They said he would take, and just like the horses, he would take something and light it on fire and jam it up his ass. I mean, that, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, this guy was just a real, real class A wackadoodle.
I mean, you figure back in the orphanage, he got turned on to eating shit. And
yeah. That's
urine.
And that's where he, yeah, got into, which is a couple of the diagnoses that they give him, because they got a list of about 15 to 20 different things that he falls under, all of a sexual deviance disorder. All of them kind of had that element to it. And yeah, it was then when, you know, where was I going with this? As you can see, nothing has changed, ladies and gentlemen. 12 years old. He is he got out of
the orphanage
in, was it, eight, was that 1880 he got out? was that when he was, because his mom eventually got financially stable and was able to take and get him out of this orphanage, and he was about 10 years old. So yeah, that was probably around the time that he was let out. And 2 years later in 1882, and he's 12 years old. 12 years old, I was playing with G.I. Joes and Matchbox cars. Nope, this guy is diving right into some homosexual relationships. At 12 years old, he has his first relationship with a boy. By the time he was 20, he was a prostitute in New York. He himself had six children with his wife, whom later ended up cheating on him with, I think it was a hired hand that was working there at the house, leaving him, just like the Kenny Rogers song, 400 children. four hungry children and the crops in the field. He was left with six hungry children. And that didn't sit well with him. It was hard for him to deal with his wife leaving him. And then he had the hardships of trying to, make sure these kids are fed and taken care of. And, you know, it didn't sit well with him. He did his first prison stint. I think he was about 19 years old. He went to Sing Sing Correctional Facility. And that, I believe, was over grand larceny, which was one of the pettiest of crimes that he did. I mean, that grand larceny just sounds like a walk in the park compared to some of the other shit that he did. And that, again, is when he started dating I think the boy was 19. I'm not sure if he was 19, but I think the boy that he was dating was 19. And it didn't go well. Nothing ever does with old Albert. He had with him in his arsenal, which he used to brutally dismember and torture small children and even into, you know, teenagers. The implements of hell. Yeah, there was a saw. Much like a hacksaw, an old-time hacksaw. There was a butcher knife and a meat cleaver. These were specifically titled Implements of Hell, or Implements from Hell. And this guy, I mean, it's really unbelievable because, like I said, you know, the children. And some, I think the youngest that I've come across is about 4 years old.
He was the second.
He was the second one. Francis McDonnell, or Donnell, he was age 8. These are confirmed ones that he said, yes, I did this. He confessed to these guys. Francis McDonnell, what are you going to say?
And then he, the Francis McDonnell one, and he the one that he tied to the tree?
I believe so. Hung him from the tree with his own suspenders and actually carved out part of his hamstring.
Yeah, and then didn't he skin a part of him or something too?
I think so. Yeah, I mean,
slit him.
It's you know, hard to. He just did so much heinous things, you know, to these kids. But yes, Francis, he was again, I believe, hung from a tree by his suspenders around his neck. And that's how he was found with, you know, half his hamstring taken out. Billy Gaffney, he was age 4. He was the 4-year-old I just mentioned. He disappeared out of the apartment building. I believe that he was playing with some other kids. And this is where you hear the reference, the boogeyman. One of the other little boys that, Billy Gaffney was playing with was found for some reason on the roof of this apartment building. He was not injured, but simply said, you know, the boogeyman took him. And that would be obviously Albert Fish. He was also known, I think, more widely than that the gray man, because he was gray, had a gray mustache, and eyewitnesses had, you know, seen some of these kids that have disappeared. One of the last people they were with was a guy with gray hair and a gray mustache. Some of these suspected victims happen to be Emma Richardson, Yetta Abramowitz. She was 12. Robin Jane Lou, she was 6. Mary Ellen O'Connor was 16. And Benjamin Collings, he was 17. And again, these are suspected because, you know, they went missing. Some of them were, again, you know, said to have seen these kids last with the gray man, you know, and described him perfectly. Now, this is where I start to butcher the English language. He pleaded guilty. Once he was finally caught, and, well, the way he got caught was happened to do with the case of Grace Budd, a 10-year-old girl. And what he would do is his method of picking people out to satisfy his barbaric needs and his sexual deviant urges, he would take and look in the phone book or the newspaper, not the phone book, the newspaper, and look in the ads where, you know, there would be teenagers that would put ads in there saying, hey, I need work, I'd be a farmhand, blah, blah, blah. And what he would do is he would go under false names and, of course, with a whole bullshit story. I own a farm in this part of New York and, you know, I need help and I need good farmhands and blah, blah, blah. And then he would go and visit these people, and which is what happened in the case of Grace Budd. He went to the Budd's residence and, of course, under a different name, stating that he was a farmer and he was answering an ad in the paper that Grace's older brother had put out there. So he gets there, and there's a movie that we checked out called The Gray Man, which actually you can watch it right on YouTube, and it goes along with this story pretty well from what I've been able to read as far as how this actually transpired. It goes along pretty well. He almost seemed in the movie and how it was portrayed, which I can probably see this with this, you know, nut job. He almost seemed disappointed that when he first met her brother, he was hoping to be a little bit younger. Maybe not so old. I think her brother was maybe 18 or teenagers, you know, mid-teens. And
he said he felt that he could overpower him.
Yeah, that the kid could, mm-hmm. Right? And so that didn't sit well with him. He wouldn't be able to have his way because this boy could, you know, pause. This guy's old at this point. I mean, he's, you know, 50s. He's kind of a frail guy. But all that changed, and his attention was turned quickly to Grace, and it is stated, and I tell you what, man, just a completely different time back then because, you know, I mean, we're talking about, you know, the 20s. Grace's parents were not very well off financially. So Fish was able to take and then really, you know, get to him by flashing some money. Flash some money, here you go, and then give Grace some, you know, some money here, and give her older brothers some money, and blah, blah, blah. And he ends up getting, I guess when you're down and out and somebody comes in and starts, you know, flashing money in your face, you're like, hey, all right, this guy's a pretty good guy. I could use some of that because we're broke-ass bitches, you know. And that's what happened. They had this just trust based on nothing with this guy just because he flashed money out. So long story short, he convinces Mr. and Mrs. Budd to allow him to take 10-year-old Grace to a birthday party. I don't know if he said it was like his niece's, mm-hmm. or something, birthday party, and, you know, asked if that was okay. Well, of course, they're just so like, oh, look at all that money. You know,
at first they said no.
Yeah, at first
they weren't going to let her go. And then he flashed the money, and
Then he kind of got him, was like, oh, wait a minute, man. Go ahead, Grace. Come on. You see all them bills. Get on out of here, girl. And they would never see her again. Now, here's where it got really, really disturbing to me. And I don't have, you know, exactly, you know, the letter, you know, written down, which anybody can go and read this, you know, if you are interested in this case. And I'll put some links in the description for the podcast. That he wrote, just like a lot of other serial killers, and you've seen it in The Night Stalker, who would send taunting letters to the police. Jack the Ripper did it. And I think Son of Sam, you know, the Zodiac. You know, a lot of these guys, you know, it's just common thread, common coin a lot of times. And Fish was no different, but Fish did it, you know, I get... you know, taking and sending a letter to the police to antagonize them, to take and just, you know, play with them, toy with them. Albert wrote a letter to their mother, to Grace's mom, and literally in some horrific details, mm-hmm. explaining exactly what he did, all the way down to cooking preparations for her.
Yeah, and she had to have her son read it to her because she was illiterate.
Yeah, yeah.
So her son had to endure what happened to his sister.
Exactly, yeah. And, I mean, just the utter savagery in what he did. And, I mean, we're talking about, you know, he would say, you know, things like, you know, her ass was the sweetest, you know, part of the body, and he would roast the ass. He wouldn't eat the, you know, the bones or obviously or the guts or anything. He went after certain parts.
Took him 9 days to eat her.
And he tells her own. Can you imagine getting a letter from some nut job who had kidnapped your daughter and then send you this letter talking about, oh, yeah, it took me 9 days to eat your daughter? I mean, what those parents must have gone through, and the amount of regret.
Well, we had to console her at the end to let her know that he didn't fuck her.
No,
that
he did. Yes, yes. And that's
that
what
she was still a virgin.
Right. She was still a virgin. She died a virgin. Virgin, you know. Yeah. Throws that in there after all of that. Like, you know, but hey, if all of that other stuff, like me, you know, cooking your daughter, if all that upset you, just don't worry. I didn't fuck her. She died a virgin. You know, she's pure. That was probably one of the most notable cases, I think, the Grace Budd. With this letter, it was written on some stationery. The stationery, they were able to trace back to a specific, you know, location, a business. And it happened to be that Albert worked there at that time. They were able to take... What was it? Am I getting this wrong?
Yeah, he lived in an apartment building, in an apartment that a guy who previously lived there worked at the place.
That's it. That's
and knew the address on where he had left the stationery, which was Albert Fish's address.
Apartment. His address.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, this, through a whole chain of, you know, detective work, they end up nabbing him. They go to his apartment, you know, from the address that they were able to bring about. And they wait for him. And when he get there, they kind of corner him. And, you know, at first he seems, you know, all the, okay, I'll come down to the station. And then decides to whip out a razor and try to cut these detectives. They easily, you know, disarmed him there and took him into custody. Well, that's when he started, you know, talking more and more about, you know, these murders. And yeah, he didn't deny any of them. He did say that the Francis, Billy, and Grace, the 8, 4, and 10-year-olds, those were, he admitted, yes, I did this. Mm-hmm. Killed these kids, blah, blah, blah. And what was it? Was it Billy Gaffney that
His monkey and
his
peewees.
Monkey and his peewees. went into how he would take and cook certain parts of the body, and he said that, you know, he cooked up his monkey.
It tastes like sweet nuts.
He said it tastes like, yes, like sweet nuts, and then the nuts, which he called the peewees. he said they were tough. They were tough. He couldn't eat them, so he threw them in the trash.
He threw them in the toilet.
In the toilet, that's right. Yeah, he threw them in the toilet.
he slapped two pieces of bacon on his rump and roasted that.
Yes, yes. I wish I would have thought to write this down, because I could run through a quick, how-to to cook a perfect rump roast.
You got to baste it.
You have to baste it, and usually about 2 hours, is a good time. It don't dry out, The ass stays,
He added all kinds of vegetables.
Oh, yeah, turnips and onions and carrots. And I mean, you just make a fucking stew, out of these kids. And we'd eat raw meat. And we'd literally eat.
Make his kids eat raw meat.
And he would force it on his kids. And a lot of times, these were raw kids.
Because remember, he's in the letter that he had sent Grace's mom, he had put that he knew that person from over in China who had was in the military, and they had docked over in China, remember?
Right.
And there was a famine going on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where he learned a lot of the
techniques, from
his friend.
Yeah, he was introduced to, cooking up human meat. And they said that, boys and girls, 12, 14 years old, man, it was a dangerous place to be on the street at that time.
Because they were having them kill kids.
Yeah. You go in there and need some, chops or some steak.
Yeah, because
you're getting little Billy.
Because animal meat was, $1 to $3 a pound at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was almost impossible for people to buy it.
To buy it. So they would just, abduct kids and then, slaughter them and... bring out a little 10-year-old and, what do you want? You want chops? You want,
steak?
They
would, too. They'd bring out body parts pick what pieces of meat you wanted.
And just like our modern-day butchers now, there's a place not far from the house where, they literally bring in, livestock in the back. They slaughter them, and then, boom, out the front is fresh meat. And that's kind of how they did it here, except it was 12, 14-year-old boys and girls. And you're right. That's where his friend turned him on to eating flesh, and that's where he dove into his cannibalistic needs and urges, and he developed a taste for monkeys and peewees. Not so much the peewees. They're
they're tough.
They're a little tough. The monkey though, woo, that's good eating. He was just a savage individual. He made a statement concerning, because he was, eventually executed. What was the date he was executed? That was January 16th, I believe. January 16th, 1936. He was executed in the same prison that he was put in earlier in his life for grand larceny. That was Sing Sing. Sing a song. That was also a joke, Jody. But anyway, he made a statement that, what a thrill that it will be if I have to die in the electric chair. It will be the supreme thrill. The only one I haven't tried. This is a guy, again, who would get sexual pleasure out of hurting himself. He would take, it's portrayed in the movie and in a lot of documentaries that he would take almost like these straps that would have, I don't know if they were razor blades, they were not, or nails or whatever, and he would just sit and slap his back and just like completely bust his ass open. He's bleeding all over the place, but he's getting some cheap thrill out of this. And then, of course, the nails in the pelvic area, and he would also mutilate his own monkey. I don't know about his peewees, but his monkey, he would take and mutilate it. I mean, that's just horrible. It makes me cringe. Mutilate the monkey. Who mutilates the monkey?
Apparently Albert Fish.
Oh, and you know, and speaking of Rob Zombie movies, the House of a Thousand Corpses, they actually, in the murder ride, where they're going through all these serial killers, and Bill Moseley, who actually plays Otis, actually portrayed Albert Fish because they couldn't get a whole lot of good stock footage to show of the actual Albert, and it, you know, shows him, you know, being beat with nails as an old man. I mean, yeah, they do, you know, a small little deal there. But, yeah, Albert was a strange individual. When he was in court, they brought in a group of psychiatrists. And they said that he is probably the most twisted individual because of the amount of diagnoses that he was given. He was given sadism, masochism, cannibalism, half of these I'm going to slaughter, fellatio, analingus, flagellation, voyeurism, exhibitionism, pickerism. He would eat shit and piss. That was another one of them. He started that as a kid.
Two different disorders.
Yeah, and one was, you know, simply drinking urine, and one was eating shit, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. At least that's how I read it when I was looking at it. And of course, you know, pedophilia. I mean, it's just not even all of them. I mean, this guy, I don't know, it kind of makes me want to throw up in my mouth. Think about it. He's like 10, 11 years old. Maybe even younger than that, because I think he was still in the orphanage when he started drinking piss and eating shit.
Yeah, because he met them boys.
He met the boys as probably his old partners in crime, setting the horses on fire, and, you know, then they go around eating shit and piss. I mean, I don't even know what to say about that.
That's just gross.
I mean, how bad was the mental illness in the Fish family? You know, because all those kids that were in the orphanage, they didn't all grow up eating shit and piss and turning out like him. They probably came from just as hard of a background and whatnot, and were pretty much in the same boat as him. You know, so what was really going on in that Fish household, you know, that caused Albert to just turn out the way he did? It's very intriguing to me how people can, you know, you can have one person, two people that go through the exact same thing in life. Mm-hmm. All the same circumstances, whether it be divorce, you know, broken home, whatever, you know, abuse at whatever level. Same exact things happen to two different people. One may just go completely off the fucking rails, mm-hmm. like Albert did, and others may have a hard time, but, you know, can at least be a productive member of society and not eat your neighbor's kids. Right. You know, so there's just something that I guess is, you know, I don't know, triggered in these people. They just, you just don't wake up one morning and decide to have a nice hot cup of urine. You know, with a shit sandwich while your, you know, ass roast is, you know,
basting
in the oven. Although he did put bacon on it. You got to give him that much. Everything's a little bit better with bacon.
He gives a whole new definition to a rump roast.
That's true. That is true. It's always, you know, and watching, so, you know, we were watching a little bit about him earlier, and some of the letters and everything, it's like a, you know, damn cooking show. I mean, he's telling you, okay, and, you know, for a quarter of an hour, you know, and then I would take and
put the onion in.
Use a spoon, and I'd put the onion in it this time and that at that time, and then I'd baste it, and it would come out the ass, which he said was the sweetest part of the body. I wouldn't know. I'm more of a tit man myself. And it just come out a golden brown. He said it's better than any roasted turkey he's ever eaten. He'd like to go to the fish's house for Thanksgiving.
I'm good.
Yeah. Me too. So hopefully that was enough information in this here podcast to discuss even, you know, the hardest of asses. So yeah, I think we're about ready to, you know, wrap this up. Again, I'm going to put links in the description. So, because, you know, of course, we just give a quick rundown just to maybe pique your interest if this kind of weird shit, you know, interests you. It does me, hence why I'm talking about it. But, you know, again, if it interests you, because this is one, again, this is one class A wackadoodle.
Mm-hmm.
This guy is just, I think, and we didn't get into, you know, the word for word verbatim of the letters. Those you're going to have to read on your own. Some of them are just too hard to even read. It's hard to hear these letters being narrated.
Well, one is an attorney who said that when he gave his final statements in the electric chair that he would never release any of that information.
Yeah.
Because it was so horrific and disturbing.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was so disturbing and barbaric, you know, this letter that, yeah, that was pretty much his last, you know, his final words, you know, in this letter. And that was true. This attorney went to the grave and with it, and nobody has any idea what this letter, you know, stated. Although, from his past, I think we can get a pretty damn good idea what the hell was in this letter. Just going by just using the letter that he wrote Grace Budd's parents, going by that, it almost, again, had a Jack the Ripper-esque feel to it. Jack the Ripper, he went into some details when writing the police and leaving notes, you know, for the police. And again, we're talking almost about the same, you know, kind of timeline here. You know, Jack the Ripper was, you know, about 1890s. So it's somewhat close within, you know, 10 or so years. So you pretty much had to be caught in the act when he first started. Of course, you know, things got a little better in the early 1900s, but you had to pretty much be caught in the act of committing the crime to be caught,
right?
Pretty much, because they didn't have the DNA, they didn't have the forensics like they do now. So, yeah, you had to be caught in the act, and he wasn't. He left a wake of carnage. And hey, it's just one more nut job to be proud of here. All right, so hey, we're gonna get out of here. Thank you, Jody, for sitting here and chiming in. Again, Ghostbusters 3 gonna start shooting and filming this year, this summer, scheduled to come out summer of 2020. Again, Rob Zombie is done with 3 from Hell. Can't wait to hear that, or see that, I should say. I kind of want to see it as well as hear it. I'm not going to watch 3 from Hell Bird Box style, you know, with blindfolds on. What, real quick, what'd you think of that movie?
I liked it.
You like Bird Box?
Mm-hmm. Well, what I seen, I was doing different things.
Right. It was intriguing. Mm-hmm. It was one of those movies that kind of, it was real easy for you to put yourself in this situation, you know, and having to do things like they're doing, you know, the blindfold and everything. Do you know, you've heard that Netflix has told people, you know, warning them about the Bird Box challenge, right?
Mm-mm.
Yeah. People are actually trying to drive their cars with blindfolds on.
Oh, my Jesus.
And, yeah, there was a crash. Big shock. There's been accidents. Big shocker there. Driving blindfolded. Netflix has to give out warnings that don't drive blindfold. Make sure your eyes are open when you're operating a, you know, a motor vehicle.
Yeah.
These got to be the same people that are eating Tide Pods. That's all I can say. So that will wrap it up here. This is episode 17. Hopefully we'll get Malice back in the swing of things. He is busy, you know, doing landscaping, and then when the weather, and we get all this damn snow, and he's just been a busy little tacker. But Malice will soon be back. He tells me he can't wait to get back, and we can't wait to get him back. So for Mrs. Dreads, I'm Otis B. Dreads, and we will talk to you very soon, next week. I'm going to start doing it weekly now. Again, I'm going to try and get back in the swing of it after all the holidays and everything. So, again, Gorehounds of Horror over there on Facebook. Check them out. Come by and see us here at Night of the Living Dreads on Facebook and nightoflivingdreads.com. If you're new to the podcast, want to catch up on some of our other disastrous exhibitions of entertainment, well, there they are, nightoflivingdreads.com. All right, guys, we will see you here in the near future. Later.
Things no one knows. We're going to die.